From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing heartthrob of Bob. Yes. After Dark, my friend, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, back another episode of Bob After Dark, where summertime is winding down the veil. Well, the veil, it's at its
end. It's getting close.
Oh.
A clock could be broken. A broken clock could be right twice a day.
What did I get wrong there?
The veil thins.
Okay.
Twice a year.
Twice a year.
Twice a year, the veil thins.
Where are we at right now with it?
We're getting closer to thin. Okay. So, like, imagine.
How thin is it right now?
Man, I don't know. It's not like a visualization. It's not like an Oreo cookie, right? Where you eventually get to the cream.
How
filling.
Thick can the veil? How thick can we get a thick veil? The veil is at its thickest.
I guess.
What would that be?
The equinox, summer equinox.
So that's when it's at its thickest.
Or spring equinox. Yeah, I think. I mean. I don't know, Count. Now you're throwing a wrench in my logic, my friend.
Sorry.
You're throwing logic at me.
But I just assume that a veil goes to be at its thinnest at some points. Then at some points in the year, it's got to be at its thickest.
So it's the thinnest.
Yeah.
On Samhain, right? Samhain, yeah. Or Halloween, as the common folk would call it.
Yeah.
Or Ween, as the Queen of the Night would call it. Those things happen during the. That would be like the thinnest would be during that day. Yule is another day where it's really thin,
yeah.
Like super mega thin.
Okay.
And then.
That's it?
I guess the spring equinox, but people celebrate that with like spiritual communications too, but that's more like giving to the earth. I'll tell you what. The veil is thin all year round depending on if you're tapping into it constantly.
Okay.
And there's just days where it's more thin.
All right.
How's that make? Does that sound good?
That sounds good to
me. Your two best days to perform ritual, to communicate with the dead, yes. Like legit, like I'm going to perform this magic with a K ritual to speak to the dead. You want to do it on Samhain, you want to do it on Yule.
You explained it perfectly. Thank
you. I'm glad I can do that.
Yes.
You know, Count, we're going to get to your week update because I haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
Sure.
But first, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to an episode of Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish show where we talk about
Supernatural.
Let's try that again. We're your weekly-ish show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite type of pancake?
A flat pancake, Bob. I like the flat pancakes. Chocolate chip, I think you were talking about, right? Well, I'll go with chocolate chip.
Topping or buttermilk or maple or banana pancakes?
Can I get banana and chocolate?
You can, yes.
I'll take banana and chocolate.
Yes, that's a good answer.
Thank you.
And then, of course, because it's the super most important part of the show, we need an update from Count Panic on his usually weekly updates.
Bob, you know, roaming the streets, or I should say, flying around the region, keeping things in check. Geez, what did I do this? I did a lot this past week, and I attended some local garage sales.
Did you pick up anything good?
Nothing haunted, I don't think.
No. How about any retro video game stuff?
No retro video games either. I don't even have a retro video game console. I could play those retro video games.
I do. You send them my way.
Oh, you have, but your console still is up and running?
Yes, it's my biggest hobby outside of what I do here.
Yeah. Well, you got the GameCube?
I got, the Super Nintendo, Atari 26. I got all of that.
You got Luigi's Mansion?
I do have Luigi's Mansion.
Well, there
yes.
you go. That's probably a spooky game for you, but it was doing that, and then just all around, just a lot of roaming about the region. You know, summer is winding down, and you're trying to take all these summer events. You know, a couple weeks ago, I went to a local baseball game here.
So baseball.
Baseball, you know.
Sports. I didn't know you were into sports.
Well, I'll watch a local baseball game.
Oh, baseball bat.
Yeah, bat. Yeah. Bat. I was the bat boy for that game there. But, you know, stuff like that. Doing the little summer wind down now as we get into the season where the veil is at its thinnest.
Yes. Yeah. I was in Denver.
You were making towns.
I was making towns. I was in Denver at NondesuCon.
Nice.
Where I was, I had a panel. It was a good turnout. Sold out the room as per always typically do. Don't want to toot my own horn. So, oh, hey there, people that are in from, that are listening probably in podcast land to the, from NondesuCon. Sorry, I'm a little tired. It's been a long, long day, but yeah. I'll perk up as the show goes on. I'm sure I got my agua here, but hello and thank you for tuning in.
There you have, yeah.
So Denver was a good time. We did, we celebrated a certain someone's birthday. So happy belated birthday, Queen of the Night. I know she's probably over and done with and tired of hearing that stuff, but we celebrated her birthday out there, which was a good time. That was fun. We did the con, and then we did, we went to a place called Meow Wolf.
Meow Wolf.
Meow Wolf. Meow Wolf.
It's, oh, Meow Wolf.
Meow Wolf. Are you familiar?
I can't say I am.
It's like an interactive art exhibit.
Really?
And by that, I mean, it's not like you go and look at paintings. People, like, make sculptures, and they build, like, a town inside of, like, a building. And, like, there's an overarching story that you're trying to, like, find the clues to as you, like, wander around. It's, like, one part escape room, but it's not really. It's
yeah.
more like, I don't know how to describe it. They're in several metropolitans around the country. There's a big one in Vegas right now, which is, like, a fake supermarket, and like
okay.
you go through the supermarket trying to like get out of it.
Really?
The one in Denver was like a multi-dimensional travel deal. It was a lot of fun. If you're around a Meow Wolf, or if Meow Wolf's looking to sponsor a podcast, you know who to reach out
to. So is it traveling, or is it...
No, they have, they're like set up at locations. I am really surprised Chicago doesn't have their own.
I was
going to
say, why don't we have one here?
I'm surprised. If they did, it'd be a cool thing. They could, you know, they usually like, they take up like a big area, like a big office building or something. They like turn it into this art, interactive like art fest.
Yeah, make it happen.
It's cool. I have a lot of fun there. I ate pretty decent when I was out there, but it's always nice to be home.
What'd you have? Cheese curds?
Colorado panic.
Well, cheese curds in Colorado?
We had what did I eat? He had like Italian food at one night was pretty decent.
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti was good. Yeah. I digress. Well, but no, so Denver was a good time. I am now home. I don't have to announce a convention for a little bit, which is kind of nice.
You're home safe.
We were just talking about that before the show started.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of shows this year, so it's kind of nice to take a breath,
yeah.
collect my thoughts, because we got the TV show to focus on. And hopefully I got some good news coming with that here
sure.
very soon, which I'm really excited about. But anyway, Count.
Yeah.
Have you ever listened to an episode of Bob After Dark before?
Well, you described it beautifully earlier. It's a
yeah, but what if I was to format it?
Oh.
Have you ever listened to it? You're supposed to be like, no, Bob, how's it go?
Bob, how does that work out?
You know, we split the show into a couple different parts, Count Panic. Mm-hmm. First part, we look at weird, spooky news of the week.
Yeah.
It's where you, the fans, send me in weird news articles, or I over the internet trying to find them. And these could be anywhere from, like, weird paranormal stories that are making it in the news stories, or like weird advances in science fiction, like weird advances in science that borderline on science fiction, or just overall high strangeness, or just general weird that kind of falls into our line. We cover the news stories there, and then we dive into the lore of the week, where we take the meat and the potatoes of the episode. I can't even talk tonight, Count.
Yeah,
you're about to take over.
All right,
I'm going back behind the glass. I'll leave up all the notes here. You can.
I'll wing it. Get it.
Ba-dumps.
All right,
Count, and you're ready to dive in then?
Sure, let's dive
okay.
in.
And remember, folks, you can call in at any point tonight. Our phone number is 219-845-1100. That is 219-845-1100. Let's put Count Panic to work
right
there and pick up some phone lines. It's been a while since we've had a caller that's not John, so let's get some calls in here. Not that I had nothing against you, John. I know I'll be hearing from you soon. So
there you go.
I had nothing against that. But let's get some new blood calling in, guys. It's been
new
a
blood.
Hot minute. We have the podcast is thriving. I got no complaints there. But I'm assuming that the podcast people can't just call in, because beside what people might think, I don't live at the studio.
Yeah.
So you can't call into the studio on like a Monday at 4 p.m. I'm not going to be here. You're going to get some guy named Tony Panic.
He might be around.
He might be around, but you're not going to get like Count Panic and myself.
But you mentioned new blood, Bob.
I see what you did there.
See what I did there?
The Count is holding up a cape in front of his face.
Holding up a cape. I'm doing
theater.
You
know, well, let's get you to be, if they ever decided to remake like Plan 9 from Outer Space, you could play Bela Lugosi.
I could.
Yes.
Bury me in my cape.
Bury me in a cape. And true to be told, I think he was buried in his cape.
Oh, wow.
And it, but, Ghostly did an episode about that recently.
Let's check it out there. Yeah. Yep.
All right, you ready to dive into some news stories?
Yeah, let's hear it.
First one comes to us from Oddity Central. That's a fun website I'll troll some news stories for. It is a Chinese company appoints AI-powered virtual robot as CEO.
Okay.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
So we're going to read this off. Chinese metaverse company NetDragon Websoft recently made history by appointing an AI-powered virtual humanoid robot as its CEO. The new AI-powered CEO, known as Miss Tang Yu, will be reportedly be at the forefront of Fujian NetDragon Websoft's organizational and efficiency department, overseeing operations at the technology company valued at almost $10 billion. The board of NetDragon Websoft apparently believes that artificial intelligence is the future of corporate management, and the appointment of Ms. Tang Yu is a symbolic commitment to the embrace the use of AI and change the way the company does business. Tang Yu will streamline the process flow and embrace the quality of work tasks and improve the speed of execution, a press release from NetDragon Websoft read. Tang Yu will also serve as a real-life time data hub and analytical tool to support rational decision-making in daily operations, as well as to enable more efficient risk management system. In addition, Tang Yu is expected to play a critical role in the development of talents and ensuing a fair and efficient workplace for all its employees, the press release added. In the future, the Chinese tech company plans to expand the algorithms behind Tang Yu to create a highly transparent management model as NetDragon Websoft transforms into a metaverse-based working community. Founded in 1999, NetDragon Websoft is one of China's most respected video game developers, having working on successful video game titles like Edelman's Online, Heroes Evolved, Conquer Online, and Under Oath, not to be confused with the post-hardcore band. Maybe like two people got that joke. No detailed information about the AI-powered CEO has been revealed so far, but controversial news has sparked as a heated debate on social media around the concept of the machines taking over humans' jobs has kind of come up again. Interestingly enough, in 2017, popular Japanese entrepreneur Jack Ma publicly stated in 30 years a robot will likely be on the cover of Time magazine as the best CEO. I guess we're starting to see it. I have several things I want to say, but as always, folks, we need to get the hashtag panic's take.
Well, here's the thing, Bob. We always talk sometimes on the show about, you know, how much power do you give? How much technology is too much for us to take in? I feel we're at a tipping point right now, Bob. I feel like if we do this, there's no going back. I mean, why stop with the robots in charge there? Well, how about a robot president, a robot pope? What's next?
Robot us. Yeah. Wait until you hear beep boop bop after dark.
Beep boop bob.
Yes, yeah. And then you beep boop bob after dark, and it'll be like a deep blue chest machine sitting like, here playing.
I don't know if I feel like this again. Too much power going to the tech robots.
I guess my question is: I understand in the press release they explained what it's meant to do. It's supposed to kind of problem solve really fast. And, like, come up with the most logical reasoning behind, like, things. And it's a tech-based company. So it's not like it's dealing as much with, like, human problems. You know what I mean? It's not like you have peer-to-peer, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, person-to-person interactions, customer service, service industry. It's not like that. Where, like, they need to solve...
Just shoots lasers at you.
Where it needs to solve, like, human problems.
Yeah.
If that was the case, I'd be questioning it a little bit more. You basically put an AI program in charge of a tech-based company, and I guess I get it, but as long as there's like, as long as it's not in charge of making human decisions, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I don't want that to be firing people. That would be a little ridiculous. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not for this at all, by the way. People are going to be like, wow, Bob, I'm actually kind of surprised that you said that. No, I'm not for it at all. I think that's actually horrifying, and it's absolutely scary where we're going with this. It's like, now you appointed this robot to be the CEO, and the next thing you know, we're going to have an AI running for, you know, political office or having a seat in the UN, whatever it might be, and that... Yeah. That to me is scary because it's like technology getting really, really far, really, really fast.
Now you're gonna, you know, the robot's gonna be like, "Hey, kneel before Zod here."
Right? You know, I get that. So it's not like we got the things firing people yet. So we're good there. Well, but until we have robots HR, which I'm sure there's probably a joke out there about HR being robots anyway. I don't know, man. I get where they're coming from. It's basically running the tech side of things, but the second it starts telling a person to improve their work ethic or something like that, then I would have an issue. Yeah. Like, I would be like, nah, shut that thing down now.
Yeah. Well, again, it gives a whole new meaning. If a robot fires somebody, usually it used to mean they'll set them on fire. This means they're firing from the job.
Who knows? Well, it might confuse it. Programming might mix it up and actually light somebody on fire.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, I think so. Let's move on. This story also comes to us from Oddity Central. Japanese sacred noodles have religious sutra printed on them. You following me?
Yeah.
Okay. You sound distracted.
I hear you.
Okay. Have you turned into a robot over there?
I think they're taking over.
All right. A Japanese restaurant in the city of Oda, the Gunma Prefecture, has gone viral for selling a unique type of noodles with a complete set of the Buddhist sutra printed on them. And pardon me, folks, I'm not a native Japanese speaker, so I might butcher this a little bit, but the Niritansho Kanazanti, a small eatery in Ota, has been getting a lot of attention for a product that is not even on the menu. Its so-called sacred noodles are only available as a souvenir for cooking at home or giving it away as a gift, but they're so eye-catching that people can't seem to be stopped talking about them. Cut in the thick rectangular sheets, these unique noodles feature a large calligraphy-like characters printed on them with edible ingredients remain visible even after cooking. You can actually eat and read your food at the same time. So it's like printed ink on the noodle that's edible.
Really?
A whole pack of sacred noodles actually features the complete Heart Sutra, one of Buddhism's most sacred texts. At many temples, the Heart Sutra is often given out to visitors in paper form, but Niritansho Kanazanti decided that works just as well on noodles as getting it straight from the temple. The Heart Sutra deals with the concept of emptiness and is often chanted by monks at funerals or memorial services or as a meditative practice at temples. That's the main reason why the restaurant doesn't serve its sacred noodles to patrons. It's a dish that's best consumed in the privacy of one's home. A pack of sacred noodles contains the entire 260-character Heart Sutra, as well as a booklet that features the full text of letters to help read the most difficult kanji, which is the letters in Japanese script, by the way, and a modern language translation guide for those unfamiliar with the sutras. According to the restaurant's website, the thick sacred noodles are printed using a texture of bamboo charcoal and edible caramel coloring derived from wheat. Although the characters fade a little after cooking, they are perfectly visible and readable. After boiling as possible, the restaurants recommend simmering them with seasonable vegetables like carrots, cabbage, onions, and taro. Sacred noodles are reportedly one sold in the Gunma area. A 3-serving pack comes with a dashi seasoning for added taste and cost about 1,600 yen or $12 American. Hashtag panic steak.
Well, here, Bob, and I'll tell you, a noodle is, we all like to eat.
Oh, I love me some noodles, Colin. Yeah.
But these are messages.
They are.
On the noodles.
Yes, they're religious scriptures.
Yeah.
Yes.
But would you want to eat that?
That's a good question. I would ask you the same thing.
I don't think I would.
Okay, So here's a legitimate question to you, because I knew you both grew up in a religious world. If the same thing was printed here, and it was, let's say, Bible verses, would you eat them? Like, do you think there's a sacrilege to it?
I mean, I don't know if there's sacrilege. I don't know. Maybe in the back of my mind, I think there's something wrong with it. But, I mean, I guess in a way. Yeah, you're right. I guess in a way.
Now, keep in mind, folks, here on the show, the reason why I bring this up is because we talk about spirituality in all forms. We don't necessarily just talk about one religion or another, or one spirituality versus another, or lack thereof compared to another ideology. Talk about all things, and Buddhism is a very important aspect to the world, and it's a very important culture, and it's a very important spirituality chain that you can follow. Well, it's very important we talk about these things. And it's interesting that they're using a very specific sacred text that's usually handed out in paper form at the temple.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, where, one, is it too much of, I for one, am not Buddhist.
No.
I'm not, so I can't speak for the Buddhist community. Remind me to ask Patrick from Ghostly, because Patrick is a Buddhist.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to reach out to him to see what he says. I could hear my dad in the back of my head being like, no, you idiot, you're not going to sit there and eat, you know, scriptures,
yeah,
right?
Because like tearing pages in the Bible or something. Yeah.
Well, but that's not it. They like printed it on this edible noodle. I don't know if to them it's like, you know, they probably, I would go on the assumption and say probably not, because I've heard like Patrick like talk about the spiritual belief, because it's not, Buddhism's not necessarily, it is a religion, but it's more of a like practice of mind versus
is
like.
Is it more so you're entering those good words into your body?
And I think that's where they're getting at, but I don't know if it's. Again, this is coming from an uneducated point of view, so I don't know. This is a legitimate question I'm proposing to you and the audience, is where do you draw the line? Is that, I'm assuming it's not disrespectful, because if these people are familiar with the practices of Buddhism, I'm assuming they're, to them it's not necessarily like, I don't know. It's just a good question.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, in witchcraft and different like forms and walks and paths you can take in witchcraft, there are certain times when you're going to want to like, burn an incantation or burn an intention, and you're gonna waft that in, like breathe it in, or you may stew like bay leaves. You might want to write your intentions on a bay leaves, boil them in water, or you know, you might do a simmer pot, and it's kind of the same idea. It's an aurora that you're kind of filming and
good vibes.
You're getting vibing it up. So I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know.
No.
I think it's
good. It falls with the purse from person to person.
Right. Do we have a caller?
We do have a caller.
Oh, take him live.
Take it live.
John, is that you?
Sure is. Bob.
John, you're on.
How'd you know?
Did you ever get the feeling when you leave town, all the ghosts in the region are having one hell of a party, and then when you come back, you get the feeling that, geez, boy, everything's quiet around here?
No, because there's other people out there other than me that do what I do, just not on the... Probably not in the ridiculous entertainment level as I do, but there are researchers and people, Don Bernanke being one of them, Pete Greist.
I'm not saying, you know, I should certainly miss you when you're gone, but, you know, I don't know. I just thought I'd throw that out and see. Well,
other people keep them in check other than myself, John. I'm glad to hear you call back, though.
Would I be wrong in saying, like, SpaghettiOs? Can't you make words out of SpaghettiOs? Mm. With the form of a noodle.
Like alphabet soup.
Alphabet cereal. I would say probably not, but actually I'm glad you're on the phone, because this is a good question for you. Let's flip the roles and say it's, you know, a Catholic or Christian organization doing Bible scripture on, like, a noodle. Would you consider that sacrilege, eating the scripture?
I would probably say so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you wouldn't buy, and I'm, keep in mind, this is judgment free, so I'm not judging you for this. And this is like just legitimately me picking your brain, because I know my dad's answer, he wouldn't do it. But you wouldn't eat buy a noodle that was sold by, let's say, a priest organization, or like, we're going to sell these noodles that you can cook and it's got Bible scripture on it. You wouldn't buy it because, in your opinion, that's a little too out there.
Probably. I mean, you know, I probably have to. So let's say you're saying, you know, organization from St. Stan's is selling them, and so you're asking me if I think it's a sacrilegious to.
Yeah, even if sacrilegious is too much of a harsh term, it just.
strange in that regard. Would you? Would you? Because you're
it's a little eerie.
It's a little strange. That's what I'm getting at. Or do you think it would be normal if a religious group was selling it and you'd be like, oh, okay, that's fine?
No, I don't think it would be. I agree. I wouldn't probably partake in it. I mean, just like during the season of Lent, there's certain things we don't eat because, you know, you just don't eat it.
Right. So I get it.
I think this would be in the same category, what you're referring to with the noodles. So.
Excellent. John, I appreciate it. And keep in mind, that was like a legitimate, I'm glad you called when you did. Because I was like, man, I hope he calls because I want to pick his brain on what he would do. Like I said, I hear Dad in the back of my mind being like, no, my dad be like that. He'd have some colorful words about the person probably trying to sell a Bible verse on a noodle, regardless of who they are.
You could pick my brain anytime you want. And, you know, when you mentioned Jack, is that the Jack that used to call like at 10 o'clock when you're ready to leave, or is this?
Sometimes I haven't heard from Jack in a hot minute. I know he's really busy these days. He runs like a ghost tour company.
I was gonna ask. I never, you know, if he's still around or.
Yeah, Jack. Jack runs a very successful paranormal tour company. He does ghost tours now in the city of Chicago and like the suburbs, and then he runs paranormal conventions too in the south suburbs. So Jack and I keep up on the occasion when he's around.
Okay, well, you know what, Tom, I kind of miss his late night calls.
I will. You know, I'll shoot him a text after the show tonight, and I'll be like, Jack, the fans miss you.
Yeah, there you go.
John, it's nice to hear from you. Thanks for shining in, and I appreciate your answer.
Thank you. Take care.
No problem. Have a good one.
There you have it.
Do we have another caller?
Nobody there.
Okay. So, no, that's it. And we'll leave the story behind so we can move on to the next one. But it's just that was a story that crossed through, and I know it's – I think just different strokes for different folks. To them, they're probably like, oh, you're kind of absorbing it. And I know when craft, there's certain things you want to breathe in to kind of get that vibe going, or incense or whatever it might be. In this case, just no on the noodle.
But no on a noodle.
I'm not going to judge somebody for their belief system. Like if that, not even a belief system to them, if that's okay, all the more power to them. And if that was something they're like, yeah, you should eat this. That would, you know, that's good. Juju or whatever it might be, I would partake in a heartbeat if I know it's not going to be disrespectful to culture people.
Yeah, I totally hear you.
All right, let's move on. Last news story of the day comes to us from, can you take a guess?
I think it's our good friend, is it?
Our good friend, Tim Benalla, Coast to Coast. Tim Benalla, Coast to Coast AM. Tim writes an article called Demonic Hobgoblin Frightens Paranormal Investigators.
All right.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
A pair of paranormal investigators, try saying that five times.
A pair of paranormal
investigators have a frightening experience with what they believe may have been a demonic concrete entity. Vic Harpert and Christine Towend were conducting investigations at St. Lawrence Church in Atwick, England, when their spirit box picked up a growling sound. When you hear a growl, it's negative energy. It's inhuman. It's obviously not very nice, Towen said. The two investigators uncovered lore about a hobgoblin that once tormented the reason and were so shaken by their eerie encounter that they decided to get ordained.
Really?
Did you buy your Displains Ghostbusters Goblin insurance? Did you up your goblin?
Do I need to?
You might. Apparently, these people came across the goblin of that area.
Yeah.
I love it. I have there's a link to like a larger story to this. I'll read it just because it's an interesting, like, it's a goblin. This one comes to us from unexplainedmysteries.com. I'll just read this article because it's a little longer and you can kind of get the whole from it. An incident occurred 8 years ago when Vic Harpert and Christine Towend, along with members of East Yorkshire Society Research Group, decided to conduct an investigation at St. Lawrence Church in Atwick, England, in hope of encountering something paranormal. I was telling you about the spirit box, and if it, you know, lets out a growl, they said it's a negative energy, which you guys know how I feel about everything being called demons. Going into the church ground, I got an eerie feeling right away, Christine said. It wasn't long into the investigation that they heard it, and they heard it three, then four, and then after the fourth time, they couldn't believe what they were hearing, and they're just like, oh, this is ridiculous, which is what I'm saying, too. The pair later discovered that, according to local legend, Atwick was once terrorized by a hobgoblin, a demonic creature capable of shape-shifting from one form to another. In the end, they were both spooked by their experience, that they both ended up becoming ordained ministers. That's how much this goblin scared them.
Okay, really? That spooked.
Still to this day, we're not 100% sure what we encountered, said Christine. When you start thinking about all this folklore from years ago, you start thinking, well, it's true in some form because they came up with this folklore from something. This couple, I'm not going to assume a couple, but these paranormal investigators legitimately thought that they came across a goblin in England. And if there is one story that I want to dig deeper into, it is this, because goblins.
Yeah.
It's a shape-shifting goblin in England that's terrorizing people to this day. And we need to put a stop to it, Count Panic.
Well, I'm glad you're putting is my take?
It is your take, hashtag Panic.
I'm glad you're putting a spotlight on it as well, because these need to be, people have to be more aware of these goblins, especially roaming around. But think about that. This goblin spooks you so much that you change your entire lifestyle.
Yes, because they became ordained. Goblin.
I don't think, has anybody ever, anything ever spooked you that much where you change your entire lifestyle? You ever been ordained before?
Because I can't say any of my encounters became ordained.
No.
I can tell you that it's changed my outlook on things. I mean, there's things I've experienced that I can't explain. It's like, afterlife stuff. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I've never been so terrified that's like the route I went.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but this thing is, you know, the fact that these folks are becoming ordained just because they had experience with this goblin, and we confirmed the goblin is a true entity.
We don't know, but that's apparently in this village it was terrorized by a goblin. I don't know too much the story of the goblin past this. God help me if I have to sit down and scrape enough information together for us to do a goblin episode next week.
Goblin month.
I don't know how much info I can give you on goblins.
Can we do a whole month dedicated to goblins?
A whole month dedicated to goblin and goblin-related stuff.
I told you my idea before the show. A whole month for scarecrows.
Yeah, we need to talk about scarecrow-related lore for October. That's it. We're just talking about scarecrows.
You know what? You could put two of them together, scarecrows and goblins.
What do they have to do with each other?
I don't know. It'd be fun to say, though. This is the month of scarecrows and goblins. But
I need help. Somebody send me some help here. This is too much.
But a goblin, this could be a case where it's like the Mobile, Alabama leprechaun, where they thought it was real.
Oh, this thing was like shape-shifting and like causing
we don't know. Have they seen it?
Well, this is the ancient folklore. Okay. It's not like, you know, cracking it up in a tree.
We don't know for sure.
Guys, I need help. Please send some people here. Okay, what's more believable to you, shape-shifting goblin or the man-eating gourd from a couple weeks ago?
Oh, man. Maybe the man-eating gourd.
You believe in the man-eating gourd more than you believe in the shape-shifting hobgoblin.
Yeah, the hobgoblin.
The hobgoblin. It's hobgoblin.
What's the hobgoblin?
We don't want to talk about that.
What's the hobgoblin?
We don't bring that up. Don't bring that up. Don't say that word again, because somebody's going to give us crap about that later.
Hobgoblin.
All right, quit saying. I think at that note, Colin, you ready to take a break?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break for our live fans. We'll be right back if you're still sticking around after that. And to our podcast fans, stay tuned. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back.
Yeah.
Hey, Count.
Hey, Bob.
What did you do during break?
Well, I saw a bunch of little hobgoblins running around.
Quit saying it.
Had to get them out of the studio. I was like, hey, you hobgoblins, get out of here.
Just quit saying it.
And then, Bob, you know what? what I was really doing for the break? I was gathering straw to build my own scarecrow.
Were you trying to scare crows away?
Do they actually scare crows away, though? Because don't you see pictures of crows landing on the scarecrows?
Scarecrows landing on the scarecrows?
Or crows landing on the scarecrows. Yeah.
I mean, I suppose.
Yeah. I suppose about the scarecrows.
I'm sure there's probably something to it. I know there's, like, things to it where there are some deity-type creatures that are scarecrow in essence, like Bakasura, the human devourer, but I know it's not necessarily a scarecrow. It kind of resembles one, I guess. But I we're not doing an entire month dedicated to scarecrows. If I could find scarecrow-related myth or, like, folklore, I'll give you an episode.
Yeah.
We're not doing an entire theme month. That's what I did during break. I legitimately sat here and I pondered about if I want to do an entire episode dedicated to goblins.
Well, hey, goblins.
What is a goblin?
Any goblin you want to think about.
All right. Let's get serious.
Let's settle down here.
Count.
Yeah.
Well, our last episode, we did the haunted paintings episode. And you said your favorite painting of all time was the dogs playing poker.
Dogs? Bob, I can't say enough and give enough praise to the portrait of dogs playing poker. Fantastic piece of work that is.
Okay. So I walked away from that conversation thinking,
yeah,
man, I want to do like a dog-related episode now, really? just to appease you. Oh. And so my brain kind of moved around, and I was like, I guess we could talk about lycanthropy or dog man. And I'm like, no, we're gonna wait to the Dogman episode when we get Dr. Ben Banderson in. I don't want to do a lycanthropy episode just yet. We will do that. Maybe we'll do it during Halloween. I don't know. But I was like, what if we talk about something that's commonly known through trope, but not like people don't know the lore behind it. They just know the trope behind it. And thus, I came up with the idea of let's do an episode about hellhounds.
Hellhounds?
Hellhounds. Do you know what a hellhound is?
Is it a hound of hell?
I'm glad you took the context clues.
Hellhounds. I've heard the term, but maybe I'm not.
I'm proud of you that you heard the term. Guys, this is great for Compact. Yeah. I'm excited to see this.
What is a hellhound?
Okay, you know what? I think you proposed the right question. So gather around, everybody.
All right.
For I'm going to tell you a little bit about a hellhound. Mm. I have several different articles here. Shout out to the Queen of the Night for helping me get some research for this episode. But according to the... According to the Myths and Folklore Wiki, a hellhound is a supernatural dog in folklore that originates from the underworld. A wide variety of ominous or hellish supernatural dogs occur in mythologies around the world. The hellhound has been seen several times throughout history and is not specific to any one place, but they are commonly associated with graveyards and the underworld. The most recent sightings occurred in Connecticut, Kentucky, Louisiana, Ohio, and Germany, and in or near cemeteries. And we'll talk a little bit about some sightings later. I got some testimonials to say. While considered a bad omen, the hellhound has helped many as well. The supernatural dog was said to warn people of danger and protect them when they needed it. The dog is often very loyal to those who call upon one and is said to be very watchful. While the creatures are often known as evil, they are not as evil as one would suggest. For example, the Welsh, Comyn Awyn, I apologize to the Welsh community because I'm sure I butchered that, but what that means would be hounds of the Welsh underworld were actually belonged to Bingian. However, encountering them was still considered a sign of imminent death. Seeing a hellhound or hearing one howl may be an omen or a cause of death. Hellhounds are called the bearers of death because they were supposedly created by ancient demons to serve as heralds of death. According to legend, seeing one leads to a person's demise. Sometimes people have said that they've seen once. Other times it's said they require to see three sightings of the dog before the curse eventually takes effect and kills the victim. Mm-hmm. These factors make the hellhound a feared symbol of bad things to come. They often get assigned to guard the entrances to the world of the dead, such as graveyards or burial mounds, or undertake other duties related to the afterlife or the supernatural. Hellhounds not only guard for cemeteries, but they are often seen as helper dogs for those who are about to pass. But they can also show up to said loved ones and inform them of loved ones passing. Hellhounds have been said to be black as coal and smell of burning brimstone. Mm. They tend to leave behind a burned area wherever they go. Their eyes are deep, bright, and almost always glowing red in their depictions. Other features that have been attributed to hellhounds including glowing red or sometimes yellow eyes, razor-sharp teeth, super strength or speed, ghostly or phantom characteristics, meaning they can go translucent or pass through walls. They have a foul odor, which relates to the brimstone, and sometimes their even ability to speak. In cultures that associate the afterlife with fire, hellhounds also may be depicted with fire-based abilities and appearance. While most pictures show the hellhound being evil and vicious, this simply is just not the case all the time. Hellhounds do not have to be evil or scary-looking. They could be like any large dog with pure black fur, meaning you can give your hellhound a treat, and they will, roll over and give you the tummy rubs.
Of course, yeah.
Certain European legends state if somebody stares into a hellhound's, like I said before, hellhound's eye three times or more, the person's is surely to die. In cultures that associate the afterlife with fire, like we're saying, hellhounds have the ability to maybe produce fire or have a fire about them as they walk around, but not burn the area around them, just fire coming off of them.
Hmm.
What do you think so far?
I mean, it sounds like a terrifying dog, a terrifying hound at the moment. And not a great smelling dog either, might I add.
You okay over there?
Yeah.
Excellent. You're not a little spooked, are you?
A little bit, Bob. I mean, this hellhound sounds like a Cujo.
That's not good.
No.
No, but we're learning that these things, people depict them as these vicious creatures. Did you know what the first depiction of a hellhound that we think might have been?
Ooh, what could have been?
Cerberus, the three-headed dog from Greek mythology.
Oh, yeah,
legend.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good one.
Yeah, so before the depiction of Hades became like the depiction of hell.
Yeah.
Hades was the keeper of the underworld. So every living being went to Hades, regardless if you were a hero or, positive soul, negative soul. Everybody went to the same place. And guarding those gates was the three-headed dog Cerberus, because he doesn't want people to kind of wander in and cause havoc.
Yeah.
Cerberus depicted, you might have seen him in the popular Hercules film.
That's what I was going to say, Hercules.
Yeah. Well, there's the famous story of Hercules going to the underworld, and he does combat with Cerberus. And the idea is that he tied their heads together, and they were running around
like dogs.
Mad. Yeah. But no, so that's the first depiction of a hellhound that we know of. Ancient Greeks didn't refer to them as a hellhound, but modern day, as we look through the legends throughout the eras and centuries, we look back and we say, oh, these people were even talking about these dogs, these big black gray dogs that kind of associated with fire or brimstone, because even depictions that we looked in, even the movie Hercules, I know they were kind of a fiery type of creature.
Yeah, very I'm angry. Looking at them right now, actually. Yeah.
And there's a whole phenomenon behind just the concept of the black dog. These creatures can be supernatural beings that appear sometimes in hound form and sometimes as other animals or objects, or they may seem to ever be seen as terrifying hounds. For example, on the Coltswood Hills, black dog apparitions are very common. Some seem to be the ghost of humans, often murdered. Some are dogs, many are evil, and few or even helpful, such as the stories on the Birdlip Hill. By the way, this is all in Oxford or Suffolk places in England, which guides lost travelers. So if you're walking around, like when we did the moor episode a while ago, if you're wandering around the moors and you get lost, you may a canine spirit may come to you that looks like a large black dog. Concept is still a hellhound, but in this case, instead of it being a harbinger for death, it'll help lead you through the moor and get you back on the path to get you out of there, because you're just, you being there is disrupting the vibe,
Hellhound.
Yes. Then the large hound in the case that we talked about here, had large glowing eyes the size of saucers. And that's something common of the trait of the species. And these stories go even dating back to the 19th century, and it's very common in England.
Well, England, I think, originated some of that.
Yeah, well, maybe, you know, Hound of the Baskervilles. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, this is a popular story in Sherlock Holmes. But many of these black dogs have no special name. But in East Anglia, they are often known as Shugs. Reflective of the shaggy personality. Whilst in the north of England, there are several types of species recognized, which go by the name of Padfoot, Guy Trash, which I'm sure some people could probably call other people, Bargiest, and Skriker. And on the Channel Island of Guernsey, there is a black dog called Tichico, or La Beta del Tor. It haunts the streets of St. Peter Port, and has the unearthly cry and huge flaming eyes typical of its kind. These combine with another feature, the sound of chains being dragged against the ground. La Bête is the size of a bear or a large calf, but is sometimes just invisible. You hear it. Its presence being indicted by the unearthly clanking and the howling and the stench. Several other such phantom dogs are known on the island. Lan Chan Buddha is a black dog that portends death, and another pulling its chains along prowling the forest road, and could cause death by the shock it inflicts or witness. Mm. Some people actually in that area, where these places I'm talking about, actually depict hellhounds as a fey-type creature. Mm-hmm. That's why some of these islands, those are all fey. And shout out to the British Fairies the British Fae Studies Organization that talked a little bit more about the different hellhounds in the English Isle, like Northern English Isles and even Isles off of Ireland, that talk about these hellhounds as well. Unfortunately, people have found that you can't chase these creatures off. So if you're being haunted by one, you can't just chase them off like you would a normal dog.
No.
A man tried to strike a white hound he saw in Hunbury in Yorkshire in 1880, and his stick went straight through and received such a shock that when he returned home, took to his bed and died. Mm. A headless hound haunts a village on Guernsey, and the Villa Ayroy is similar, although it can be feeling brushing past nighttime travelers. It has no substance for you to strike it. So you'll feel like the dog walking by you, apparently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, it's just... leave it alone. That's one of the phantom
really?
Dogs.
Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense.
This is written in the Pembrokeshire Herald in March 1853. They carried a fascinating report of an encounter between the Church of England clergyman and a spectral hound. The account summarizes most of the characteristics described so far, but adds something new and even more troubling. To begin with, the dog was invisible and the minister heard only its panting and patting of its paws behind him as he walked. Hmm. Then he felt it brush past him and then it revealed itself. Instead of it being black, this one was blue, and it was the size of a young calf, and it had eyes of that looked like glowing coals. So, you know, it had that like black with that red tinge. As it just discussed, his reaction was, though, I need to strike this thing down with his walking stick, but, you know, instead of trying to pray it away, I guess, or trying to, you know, if you're a clergyman and you see this dog materialize, this clergyman decided, I'm going to hit it with a stick.
But wait, it was invisible, though, right?
Oh, well, it appeared.
Okay.
It manifested.
Okay. Yeah.
So the first thing you think of when you see this dog that appears, and it's giant like the size of a calf, and it's got glowing eyes that look like hot coals, the first thing this clergyman did was pull out a stick and try to beat it.
Oh, well, I guess that's one way, but again, I don't condone any of it, even if it's a hound of hell.
No, I don't do that. No. I'm a dog person. Yeah. I love my dogs.
But, you know, the fact that there was just a panting in there, you could know there was a dog presence there, but yet you have yet to see it, then it manifests itself. I could see where that could be a little eerie, Bob. Definitely.
Oh, it gets worse in this story. So lucky for the clergyman, a coach was happening by. And the hound disappeared. The clergyman hopped up in the carriage and thought that he was safe to get home. Well, unfortunately for him, the dog manifested in the carriage with him and followed him home. And that's where the story ends. The clergyman didn't wake up the next day. They found his body dead. Mm. And people they tied this up from the person driving the carriage, said, no, I picked him up. He was rambling about this dog. This phantom spirit of a hound that appeared and disappeared, and he tried to hit it with a stick.
Yeah.
I don't blame the dog for being ticked off.
No.
If I appear to you and you hit me with a stick, I'm going to be a little angry, too.
Yeah, I know you would.
Generally, terror is the main result of an encounter with one of the black dogs. However, Harry Jack at Grangham in Lincolnshire was one of those attack solidarity passerbys and the black town of Rodway Hill in the Quantocks in Somerset left a man paralyzed for the remainder of his life after it brushed against him. So there's a lot of these tales in England. Generally, religious rituals seem to be the only thing that's good with dealing with these hounds. Wow, you don't say. You're just going to attack it with your walking stick? The black dog of Wilcote Wood near Wychwood in Celts Worlds was laid in an elaborate manner. A newborn baby and two clappers, bird scars, were acquired. A priest parried over the baby and threw one of the clappers in one pond and another in a second pond nearby. As long as the two were kept apart, it said the dog would never reappear. Don't ask. In another version of the story, the clapper was taken from a bell and the two parts put to, put in two ponds. It, for whatever reason, if the two were ever reunited, the hound would rise again. I don't understand it. I guess that was their ritual. Let's get this baby. We're not doing anything to the baby. We're just going to pray over the baby. And then we're going to take these two birds and we're going to put them in two ponds. But if they ever reunite, like, the dog could come back. But as long as they're in two separate ponds, the hound can never reappear. Yeah,
there's got to be something. And again, it sounds like they thought this stuff out, Bob, but I don't know how logical it is. But, you know, at the time, that's what they were, I guess, what they were feeling, what was right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what do you think so far?
The hound, it's tough, Bob, because they're terrifying of dogs you're describing here. But at the end of the day, we're all dog lovers.
Yes.
So are we scared of these dogs? Do we just stand back from these? I say just get out of the dog's way and let the dog do its thing.
So those are the stories. The ones I just mentioned are the stories of the phantom black dogs.
Yeah.
They may not necessarily be the same thing as hellhounds.
No.
Because some people confuse the two. Okay. And it depends on what part of the world you're in.
Yeah.
The black dogs are often confused or mingled with the aerial hellhounds known as Wisthounds, Gabriel Ratchets, or Dandy Dogs. In Wales, there are packs of them known as Cwn Bendith Y Mamw, or fairy dogs, which are still the herd on the slopes of the area a century ago, and Solidary Cabile, which ranges across the whole southern part of the country. If it pursues you, you can escape by crossing running water, which is a common thing we hear in any kind of lore. You always want to cross the running water, you look to cross over it. And it's a way of escaping this particular fairy creature. So in this part of the world, definitely 100%. The black dog might have just been a spirit, but hellhounds in this area are meant to be fae-type creatures.
Yeah.
Another name used for these Welsh hounds was Cwn Annwn, or hellhounds, which have been described in one report as a small and either black with red spots or red with black spots. Those witnessed are said to be blood red with dripping with gore. They howl in the air as if lamenting. The related Cwn Wybar are reported to be heard at night in desolate spots in mountains or moorland, banging and yelling in the air. They don't seem to do any harm to mortals, as they prey on the spirits of the dead that refuse to leave the plain. Similar creatures are also found in the southwest end of Britain. On Bodmin Moor in Cornwall, the Dandy Dogs are said to hunt the souls of the damned at night. Further west, are you ready for this
one? I'm ready.
The Goblin Hounds.
The Goblin Hounds
have been heard a haunting hares across the downs beneath Truro and Redruth. In Devon, the Wish Hounds are silent black dogs seen in the pack and that seem to threaten the living. Children can be protected by them by putting bread under their pillows.
What? Just bread?
Yes.
I guess that's one thing.
Well, folks, I got to think again. This is the British Fairy Society that talks bread? About the – they talk about the concept of a black dog, phantom dog spirit versus a hellhound.
Yeah.
It's all spooky dogs to me.
You know, I didn't even know the show was even about it. I wore all black today, so it's kind of fitting for the show. But, you know, you talk about the goblin hounds. Now, do the goblin hounds – are their owners goblins? Are they owned by goblins?
They just call them goblin dogs.
Okay.
Goblin dogs.
Goblin dogs, okay.
Yes.
Dog-faced goblins.
Yes.
Yeah.
are you doing okay over there?
I'm doing okay,
you
Bob.
You sound like you're cackling over there. Are you having
here's
fun?
The thing, Bob.
Yeah.
I thought you couldn't top the goblins. We got dog goblins now, so take that for what you will. But bread. Bread's the answer, I guess.
Okay. You ready to talk about some like encounters closer to home now? Sure. You talked about England and Cerberus and Greece.
Like right next to us?
What if I was to tell you that there's a city in the great state of Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
That might be plagued by hellhounds.
Really?
What? Chippewa Falls.
Chippewa Falls.
Chippewa Falls. There's apparently several different areas in the city. This story comes to us from like their local paper, which is called Volume 1. There's the cursed island of Meridian, the forgotten ghost town of Meridian on the Chippewa River west of Eau Claire. Not only is the area thought to be haunted by a siren ghost of Mary Dean, which is great in of itself, but is also the favorite prowling grounds of hellhounds. According to legend, nearly 60 years ago, a parked truck was found down by a boat loading off the Meridian. It was believed that two young kids who have gone down to the area and parked their vehicle were brutally torn apart by some fierce wild beast that they couldn't track down on the island. When police looked inside the vehicle, they discovered blood splattered all over the interior, but the bodies of the victims were missing. Further analysis uncovered clumps of their hair from clumps of hair from some identified animal, and the bodies of the youngsters were never found. Although this makes for a troublingly good story, the writer of the article said they have not found any evidence that it actually happened. The gentleman at one of the lectures that this writer talks about says that they believe that they've seen the kids actually out there and have seen the ghost of the Mary Dean, which would be an interesting story. We'll cover that one later. And while this guy was out investigating the ghost of Mary Dean and riding his bike on this island, a gruesome-looking hellhound came running right next to him, and the man kicked out his foot in an attempt to hit the ferocious dog. Much to his surprise, his foot simply went right through the creature, much like the stories really? We talked about in England with the walking cane.
Interesting.
Which, that's a common theme amongst these hellhounds. If they try to catch up with you in transportation, they'll do whatever they have to get into the vehicle with you or catch up to you in the transportation, and they will follow and match your speeds. We'll get to that a little bit here in a moment. There is the Highway 37 beast in the same area of that. If you happen to survive Meridian, don't give up yet. There's plenty of hellhounds to go. In 2001, the writer was contacted by a woman who was a bit shaken up by an odd late-night experience. On what seemed to be just another drive home, the woman was making her way south on Highway 37 when something odd caught her eye. Instinctively, she slowed down and caught a glimpse of what initially she thought was an extremely large dog. As her vehicle slowed, the real shape of the creature emerged. Crouching off to the side of the road was a large, muscular, heavy creature. And the story goes that it had the glowing red eyes and happened to have a dog's mouth as well, kind of smiling at her.
Yeah.
Long story short, don't travel on Highway 53.
And it's only Highway 53, Bobby? We know for sure?
Yeah, I don't think that's in the same vicinity as Bray Road, but it's definitely in one of those.
But is it that open to the public still or no?
Yes.
It is.
Chippewa.
Are you curious to give it a
I'm going
to
go there. I'm going after these hellhounds in Wisconsin.
How far is it away from us right here?
Chippewa Falls.
Farther to Madison.
It is.
Closer to Madison.
I could tell you that there's a population of 14,197.
Okay.
That's all I could tell you.
And stay off
that
highway.
715 area code.
All right.
But apparently there's lots of hellhounds there. And then when I'm looking at the map, it looks like it's up there in the state. It's like way up there, like northwest, like super up there.
Yeah.
But the last story of the beast chasing that woman down on the highway, that's and she says this thing was large and almost ran bipedal. Sounds more like a dog, man. We'll talk about that here in the near future. Last thing I want to talk about is to an encounter of a person. They wrote this story. I have no validity to say that they're right or wrong. I'm just going to read the encounter. But apparently, a person had not one, but two encounters with a hellhound. And the story goes, I live in a nice suburb of Metro Detroit. There aren't many large animals in the area aside from deer. The only other animals in the area are your typical pet squirrels and an occasional fox or two for the most part. It's a pretty tame area. Barton. I was driving through the neighborhood leaving my girlfriend's around midnight last summer as I was driving north on a street in a subdivision, something caught my eye from the very left edge of my field of view. It appeared to be a very large, well-built creature hurling from a backyard on the grass and into the street. I slammed on my brakes and immediately in disbelief at what I was witnessing. It was moving extremely fast. I don't have a very good estimate, but I would say this thing leapt and started running at me 40 to 50 miles an hour. The yard at which it emerged was directly facing a short cul-de-sac that backed up into some trees and the more houses beyond that. I immediately turned right facing the court so that my headlights would illuminate the path that seemed to be running. I was the only witness for a few more seconds, but I have no doubt in my mind whatever I witnessed was real. The creature was very large, and if I had to compare it to the size of any animal, I'd say it was the size of an adult lion. The body type appeared to be that of a dog, although I've never seen any breed of dog that size, and there's absolutely no wild or stray dogs in that area. It had a pitch-black coat, and while I can slightly make out the shape from the side of a head, I never saw eyes or a mouth. When it ran past my headlights initially, it never acknowledged my presence. It didn't even turn to look at me, slow down, or anything that was directed toward me. When I turned facing the court, I was only able to see the black of the creature before it disappeared into the backyard of the center house of the court into the woods. Determined to get a better look, which sometimes could be a good or a bad thing, I drove recklessly 40 miles an hour out of the court, about 40 miles an hour out of the court and around the bend of the street in which the yard would back up to. But it was already gone. I continued to drive home and tell my girlfriend about what I've seen. With no explanation, I kind of shrugged it off, and it just being a very unusual night. I would argue that maybe you saw a dogman, because I know Michigan's got the dogman stories. Yeah. Let's move on.
Dogman, you confirmed it. Closed case?
No, because there's a second encounter of this. Now, this is what I believe to be my second encounter with what I'm guessing is a hellhound. I don't know exactly how many days later. It was probably a week, but I went to go smoke a cigarette outside my house around midnight. I typically go out to my garage and smoke in the side of the house next to the garage. I put my shoes on and walk to my laundry room through the garage door. It's attached garage. As I stepped into my garage, I had this very bad feeling overtake me. It's the type of feeling when you think that you're being watched or being stalked. The hairs on my neck, on my arms stood up, and I felt a very eerie, sinking feeling at the bottom of my stomach. I paused completely still, not breathing, to assess the situation. A few seconds passed, and I heard and saw nothing. I looked over to my right, and I saw the side of the door was completely shut, but something just still didn't feel right. There are two vehicles that stay parked in the garage that are for summer driving only. I look around and still see nothing and hear nothing. Then, out of what seemed of nowhere, the furthest vehicle from me begins to shake. I immediately think, oh, it's just a cat. I don't know what cat's going to make a car shake, but okay. And then I realized that there's no way a house cat in my neighborhood can cause him to move a vehicle like that. Well, hadoy. That's when it went from scary to absolutely frightening. As the car was shaking, I heard the most horrific sound I probably will ever hear in my entire life. It sounded like an extremely deep growl mixed with a high alternating pitches of screeching all at the same time. The noise hit me in the deepest, most primal level and stuck with a level of fear I've never experienced. Even when I face life or death situations, I've been held up at gunpoint before, I've never had a feeling quite like this. It was deafening loud, and the vehicle began to shake even more. The noise was more horrifying than anything Hollywood could dream up. It sounded like whatever it was warning me to leave. And then it began to be angered at my presence, and I was too afraid to stay any longer immediately and slammed the door into my house and locked both locks. I put a note on the door telling my brother to go through the front in the morning, and there's something in the garage, and it is extremely agitated. I ended up calming down and going to sleep without really worrying about it. When I awoke, I saw the note and kind of laughed at myself for being so afraid. I went out through the front door and walked through the side of my garage, and the door was still shut. I sighed and decided that it was daylight. I have nothing to be afraid of. I opened the door away from me very quickly, but before I could blink, a pitch-black creature sprinted out of the door. This time, it was not as large as my initial encounter, but moved faster than it was before. And this thing, he believed, had to have been about 75 pounds. But the speed in which it was moving was inconsistent with any dog. Again, it was moving about 40 to 50 miles an hour, allowing me to only see it for a few seconds before it was 50 yards from me disappearing into the woods. Again, with the second encounter, it never looked at me. I never got a glimpse of its face or eyes. I never stopped to think of what I seen might have been a paranormal until today when I searched the description. I was horrified to see that it matched of a hellhound, which I disagree with. It seems the mythology behind these creatures are a bit contradicting. Omen of death, nothing may occur, and possibly a protector. But now I'm worried I'll encounter it for a third time, which means I'll be dead. I always felt it was always unusual that it never looked at me, but now I'm thankful that it seemed to consciously choose not to. Folklore says if you look in the eye three times, it's a guaranteed omen of death. So now here I am, and I don't know what to think. I feel confident that it was a hellhound and it wasn't looking at me, but I don't know what it was for sure. And then they ask what it could have been. This was posted to the paranormal subreddit, our paranormal. I don't think it was a hellhound, but I don't think it was a dog man either. A dog man would have killed you. And it would have ripped the door completely off. You don't need a closed door to deal with the dog man. Dog man will rip steel right off. We'll talk about a dog man later. But those are a couple different encounters between Chippewa Falls and the story of the Metro Detroit Hellhound.
Well, you know what? With the hell, the thing is, Bob, how do I know now if I'm not out and about, just walking the streets?
Yeah.
And I see a giant black dog.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know now if it's a real dog or a hellhound?
I don't know what to tell you. Does it smell like brimstone? Does it have glowing red eyes?
How far can I smell the brimstone?
Not in any of the lore.
I mean, if
you
want
to ward this off, you need a baby and two birds and some ponds. You got to put bread underneath it. It's interesting that all throughout England, these hellhound lores, depending on whatever you want to call them, and I do apologize for butchering the Welsh speak of the names of these things, but there's different types of these hellhounds all throughout the country. And that blows my mind because they say, well, it's commonly confused with a hellhound. The hellhound might be more fae-like. It sounds to me like it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
That's just my perspective.
No, I think you're right about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the stories of the hellhound. What do you think, Count Panic?
Well, Bob, this is not going to change my mind. Dogs are great. But still, you got to watch out for those. I think the worst you got to watch out for is the little dog hound goblins.
The dog. We got to look into these dog goblins.
The dog goblins.
The dog goblins.
And the knob goblins.
You had to say it again.
Yeah, here we go. But, Bob, that was a great episode. Again, we don't think about the animals too much of the paranormal and the cryptid animal. I mean,
this isn't cryptid. Yeah, the hellhound's not – this isn't a cryptid.
No.
This is a legitimate, like
– lore.
I don't know if it's a spirit. I wouldn't know if you consider it a demon. I don't know if you consider it a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
But it's a piece of lore that we legitimately have encounters with, especially in Chippewa Falls. You know, they're there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you consider it cryptid or not. I guess it would fall in the cryptid category, but I wouldn't consider
mythical cryptid.
Yeah, we'll go with that. You know, you watch something like Supernatural, right? And they have the hellhounds in there, and the hellhounds come to collect souls of people that sold them to a demon. I mean, you got that. You got the Cerberus from, you know, Hercules. But where does these stories come from? Where does the lore come from? And over hundreds and even thousands of years, the story evolved from being, you know, this three-headed dog hung out in the cave to protect the underworld, and now they protect cemeteries. So it didn't change that much, but it's interesting how the characteristics changed. Do I believe something like Cerberus ever existed? Probably not. But the idea that these hellhounds are even seen all across the world, and they all have very similar characteristics, kind of draws to a line of either a bunch of people are making this up or they're all having the same exact coincidence. It's kind of a hard pill to swallow thinking it's all coincidence.
Yeah.
That's just me.
And my thought here too with that is, what do you do? You know, in the old cartoons, you have the dog chasing the cat. Will hellhound chase a yule cat?
That's a great question. Are you pitting a hellhound against your yule cat?
Like, I don't want to see animals fight, but
no, you're like, my yule cat protect me.
Well, yule cat's a giant. Big as a house. Big as a house. So I don't know. But it'll be a good competition, I think, for the both of them.
I remember, you can't be hit with a stick. So I don't know, man.
No. No.
Do you have any closing words for our audience tonight?
Be nice to your dogs.
Absolutely.
Your pets. And your cats. And all your animals out there.
You're going to give the Bob Barker ending to The Price is Right?
Spay and neuter your animals. Help control the pet help control the hellhound
population. Yes. Get your hellhound spayed or neutered.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
How many hellhounds do we want running around out there?
Help control your hellhound.
Would you adopt a hellhound?
On a heartbeat. I love dogs, man. There's a hellhound. Yeah, absolutely. Kind of fit the motif of what I do, you know.
You and your hellhound.
I love dogs, yeah. Man. They're my favorite. But I digress.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. And to Mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're comfortable and happy. Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are, not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.